Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome, weary traveler. Need a short rest? Oh, I see. They said you'd be showing up about now. Come on, through the portal. Best not keep the Lore Mistress and Lore Master waiting. You know how they get.
Robots Radio presents the Dungeons & Dragons Lorecast. The best way for everyone from experienced dungeon masters to those curious about D&D to learn more about the worlds, creatures, and lore of Dungeons & Dragons.
Nanad paused, tapping the finger quill absentmindedly on the parchment as he gathered his thoughts. He resumed writing in his small book, noting the day's activities. Shadow, the master of the East Tower, again today. He met with the Zent agents you described to me before I began this mission. I was close enough to listen, but the Zents used a spell or device to mask their conversation. Next time, I will place myself in such a position so that I may attempt to read their lips. The half-elf rogue closed his eyes and stretched his legs. Following an overwizard was the fun part. Reporting his comings and goings was far from fun, but necessary. Nanad froze when he heard the floorboard creak. His short sword lay on his bed, as well as his potion belt. "Please make no sudden movements," the voice behind him intoned, "for I have no wish to kill you, Nanad of the Harpers." "Caught? But how? And by whom?" "Keep your hands in sight. Place that knife you keep in your left sleeve on the table. Oh, and would you be so kind as to slip off your blade boots too? That's a good sport." "Someone knows an awful lot about me," Nanad thought to himself. "What now?" Nanad asked in a calm, level voice. His still unknown captor said, "You're wanted in the Host Tower. Ocklum Greith is wondering why you are following Overwizard to mine, and wishes to chat with you. Come along now, will you?" Shivering with dread, the Harper agent had no choice but to comply with his escort. Hello and welcome to the Dungeons and Dragons Lorecast. My name is Sergio.
My name is Sean.
And Sean, what are we talking about today? What was the point of this very tense and evocative intro?
Well, to introduce us to the Arcane Brotherhood, of course.
The Arcane Brotherhood. Something that hasn't gotten too much, I guess, publicity in 5th edition. They are definitely still around, but they are the lore, most of the lore that we are reading from, that we're gathering information from, is from 3rd edition, where they were heavy hitters. And Ocklum Greith, the aforementioned, was definitely a part of that. We'll definitely get into the lore behind this ne'er-do-well. But the Arcane Brotherhood is a society of evil mages that operates more or less openly out of the city of Luskan. I love that. I love that they're like the Legion of Doom, from the old Justice League cartoon, you know, headed by Lex Luthor, or the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants, you know, that's run by Magneto.
Yes.
Which I think they ended up changing to just the Brotherhood of Mutants, right? Because
I don't think Magneto thinks of himself as evil, so
right, like that
be
was
a weird name choice.
Like, I know what everyone's thinking, but so yeah, just this, you know, the idea of having a collective of ne'er-do-wells, of rascals, of evil, you know, evildoers,
of villainy,
a city of villains, if you will. Speaking
Good
of
title.
City of Villains and City of Heroes, this is an aside, but there was, remember that MMORPG?
Mm-hmm. We used to play it.
Yeah, they have a server that the maker of the game, Interplay, has essentially blessed, has given their blessings to continue on. So, if y'all remember that City of Heroes and City of Villains MMORPG, it's still around and it's still a lot of fun. But we're not talking about heroes; we're talking about villains here. Not just any villains, evil mages known as the Arcane Brotherhood. So while the City of Sails, which is what Luskan is known as, is ruled ostensibly by the five High Captains, you know, all these former pirate lords, the Brotherhood is really and truly the true power behind the city, as well as the source of its notoriously aggressive attitude toward pretty much everyone else along the Sword Coast. Like, they're kind of beefing with everybody, you know, from Waterdeep to Baldur's Gate to all the 10 towns, essentially.
Wow, that's a lot of beef.
that is a lot of beef. So while the Brotherhood generally avoids conflicts with greater powers, you know, they're not trying to punch up by any means, like such as the aforementioned Waterdeep. It has no hesitation about harassing smaller cities and weaker merchants who can't defend themselves as easily. The typical evil bully behavior. The archwizards who rule the Brotherhood have their fingers in any number of unsavory pies, including piracy, slavery, drug trafficking, smuggling. And this is all in addition to legitimate trading ventures.
Well, yeah, you got to diversify your portfolio.
Exactly.
If
the drug trafficking all of a sudden, if they legalize, you know, skooma in Waterdeep, you know, you got to be able to fall back on your, you know, legitimate
piracy. Yeah.
Your legitimate import exports.
Yeah. Or your laundry business.
Right. Exactly. The Brotherhood undertakes these activities not for their own value, but as a means to an end, which is to establish economic and political sovereignty over the North. And in times past, the peoples of Neverwinter, of Longsaddle, and other targets of the Brotherhood's ambitions, they could rely on internal disputes and rivalries between the senior mages of the Brotherhood to prevent the organization from bringing its full power to bear on any one target. Which is, I mean, obviously, you as a city that could be potentially a target, it would be best to not have an organization of evil mages, you know, to have you in their and be in their crosshairs. But if there is such an organization existing, it would be nice that they're so evil that they're often infighting and bickering amongst themselves to actually produce, you know, the full brunt of its power.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So the wizards and sorcerers who lead the society from their lofty perches within the Host Tower Arcane, which is essentially Arcane Brotherhood HQ, they consider one another rivals as much as they do comrades. And they've often plotted against one another as intensely and brazenly as they do their intended victims.
That sounds exhausting.
Right? I mean, like, it's one thing to always have to be, you know, plotting and planning against an external force, an external enemy. But then you've also got to watch your back for the knife that might be plunged in between your shoulders.
Yeah. You should be able to, like, it's a brotherhood. Come on.
That's, I feel that's the last thing the, like, the shortest tenured Oberwizard says before he's killed. Come on, y'all. This is a brotherhood. So this internal strife actually culminated at one point with the assassination of a key mage by a pair of his own fellows. And this was followed by an unsuccessful coup attempt that left the Brotherhood in confused disarray. And so that caused cities throughout the Sword Coast North to breathe a collective sigh of relief when the Brotherhood Brotherhood's attacks as a result of this internal strife slowed. The attacks on shipping and caravans slowed and then pretty much came to, almost to a complete end.
Can you imagine, though, if you were one of the customers of, like, their legitimate businesses, like, you show up to get your laundry and, right, like, it's just closed for, like, a year?
Right. You're like, I need my
robes.
I need
these trousers. Yeah.
I need these are my work robes.
I got to buy all new work robes now.
Because they're screwing around with drug trafficking and slavery. I should have just gone to the launders across town. My partner was right. She's always right.
She's always right. I'm always wrong.
Always wrong. But hey, you know what? Cut yourself
Lesson
some
learned.
Slack. Lesson learned, you know?
Tuition paid, as we say at my job.
Why do we fall down? To quote the greatest movie of all time, starring Christian Bale, in which he plays a man who dresses up as a bat.
In which he becomes a man.
In which
who
he
dresses
becomes
up as a
man. Yeah. That's right. There you go. So when the Archmage Arcane of the Host Tower had not been seen in nearly a year, some people dared hope that the Brotherhood had actually withered away and died, leaving honest folk with one less threat to worry about in this already dangerous part of Faerun. However, these hopes were dashed when the Brotherhood-sponsored forces returned to the sea lanes and trade routes with a vengeance immediately after midwinter in 1372 DR. The Luskan pirates struck swiftly and successfully against independent merchants and off the coast of Neverwinter, and a strong force of slavers believed to be working at the behest of the Brotherhood attacked a caravan bound for Long Saddle, carrying off not only its trade goods, but its entire crew as well. And because of these events, word is spreading throughout the Sword Coast that the Archmage Arcane has returned to the Host Tower and that he's redoubled the Brotherhood's efforts to control the neighboring lands. Some folks in Luskan are whispering that the Archmage's return was accompanied by fell creatures that have been seen both high in the spires of the Host Tower and in the shadowed streets of Luskan. Whether this gossip is accurate or just the stuff of paranoid speculation, one thing is clear. When the Arcane Brotherhood is at full power, when they are not infighting and in disarray, that means dark times are ahead for the North.
Like winter is coming, maybe.
Some might say that. Some that would not want, that are just unfearful of copyright strikes might say that, certainly. So a quick history of where the Arcane Brotherhood came from. Now, none can say with any certainty exactly when the Host Tower in Luskan was constructed. It's on the island at the mouth of the Marar River. Nor can they say who built it. They just know that when the Arcane Brotherhood first began inhabiting the tower and making their presence felt in the city of Luskan. So for all intents and purposes, this tower has always been there.
Pretty cool.
I mean, it's very cool, actually. The first known mention of the place is in this oral tradition, sort of epic poem known as the Marar Saga. that narrates the arrival of the first Northlander pirates to settle in the Sword Coast region. And these tales are collected in a tome by a lore master by the name of Malcer Truquill, that's
lucky name,
right? Like, it's like a chicken or the egg sort of thing,
right?
It's like, my name is Malcer Truquill, what should I be? Lore master would, you know, be right up my alley.
I mean, my brother Benny Truquill, he's a chicken farmer, but you know, I think honestly, yeah, lore master might be for me.
So according to this chronicle, a band of these explorers arrived at the mouth of the Marar River just ahead of a fearsome storm, seeking shelter along the riverbank. Instead, what they found was what appeared to be a gigantic tree made of entirely of stone, with its, you know, quote-unquote branches rising hundreds of feet into the air above an island in the midst of the river's current. This, let's be honest, eldritch sight struck fear into the hearts of the raiders. But the storm was closing in, and they're like, well, you know, the storm will definitely kill us. Who knows, you know, what lies inside. We'll take our risks with that. And there's nothing better available, so in they went. With heavy hearts and weapons in hand, they entered the stone tree to escape the murderous winds and freezing sleet. However, the saga does not tell what fate overcame the half of the raiding party that failed to emerge from the tower, only that the survivors fled that terrible place even as the storm was at its height, preferring to take their chances with the raging elements rather than face whatever lurked within the grim stone spire. Which is awesome. It's like, look, this is bonkers to look at, to imagine. This thing shouldn't exist, but there's this deadly storm out here. We'll risk whatever's in there to survive. Cut to, hell no, we're out of here. We will risk the deadly storm.
Yeah. Gigantic tree made entirely of stone too. That's such a striking image. I mean, eldritch is exactly the right word for it.
I love it. So in modern times, the tower's reputation is just as evil, though the source of this dread is somewhat more visible and no longer nameless, seeing as how the Arcane Brotherhood now takes up residence within its walls. The stone tree still sits where the explorers found it, rising high above the crowded streets and rocky shoreline of Luskan. Its eerie silhouette casts a baleful shadow over the city, and citizens in the streets tend to glance frequently at its bizarre shape, as if they expect something unspeakable to emerge from its depths at any moment. The tower is no longer merely the setting of some strange Northlander fable. Like I said, now it is the headquarters of the Arcane Brotherhood, the conclave of evil mages, dedicated to the hateful pursuit of conquest and domination.
So imagine that you're a youth on the Sword Coast.
Right.
And you hear about, like, do you think you'd at least want to, maybe you wouldn't move there, but like, you'd at least want to see this, right? Like, I think I would, even if I knew it was evil, I'd be like, well, I just want a peek. I plan my senior trip around it.
I mean, it's why folks still go to like Salem, Massachusetts, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Or Roswell. They want to touch the veil between worlds, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I'd be okay with living in a town with a giant tower that looked like it might expel something unspeakable at any moment. I think I'd be like, this is pretty cool.
I mean, the property values surrounding it are probably pretty low. So get a good deal.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, I'd have bragging rights forever. Yeah.
Oh no. Yeah. It's like, you know, that like giant stone tree that might, unleash some unspeakable horror upon the land. Yeah. Well, I have that blue house, right, you know, about half a block away. That's mine. You can see it in most of the pictures. Folks differ on exactly when the Arcane Brotherhood first appeared in Luskan and what precisely its activities have been in the years followed, but general consensus agree that Arklam Greeth, the Archmage Arcane, arrived in Luskan sometime around 1311 DR. And since then, the Archmage has built his evil brotherhood slowly, mage by mage, attracting them to the host tower through promises of great power and wealth. Members of the society have come and gone over the years. And by years, I mean decades, close to centuries. But Arklam Greeth has remained the head of the organization since its inception. Greeth's ambition of the in the last two decades has remained the same, to control the North. That's singular focus. I don't know to what ends. Like, I don't know. And no one seems to know, like, what they intend to do. Were they to, it's like, you know, like a dog who catches a car, who, you know, once they get it, who knows what the
right,
the
what's
point,
he gonna do with it? Yeah,
what's he gonna do with that car? What's he gonna do with the North? but some members of this organization are specifically recruited personally by Greeth because he believes that they could help him achieve this goal. Others sought out by the host tower and its evil conclave on their own, and others seek out the host tower on their own initiative, either to join the effort to dominate the North or to simply reap the benefits of membership in such a society. I feel like those are the ones you got to worry about.
Yeah, those are definitely, yeah, the executives at OCP and RoboCop who are just killing each other constantly.
I can understand someone who wants to dominate, who wants to have power, wants to be in control. Like, I get that. But someone who's like, oh, like I could just like an opportunist. An opportunist is to me more terrifying than someone who's just traditionally evil.
Yeah, yeah. You're more likely to attract like a sociopath that way, I think, right, or a psychopath.
So Greeth and his followers have ruled Luskan itself for a good while, ever since the High Captains first came under their sway. Fear of their power, coupled with the substantial profit from their illicit activities, it keeps the High Captains in line and loyal. The Brotherhood views the control of the city as crucial to its long-range plans, since the conquest of the area requires a secure and well-defended base of operations, not to mention the means to raise the necessary gold to fund the organization's magical research and other activities. So with the city's leaders firmly within its pocket, the Brotherhood is in a position to know nearly everything of importance that occurs in the city. In a city where you own the police, you are the police.
Yeah.
To date, the methods that the Brotherhood has employed in its quest to rule the North have yielded mixed results at best. You know, waging this war of piracy and raiding against any target that the High Captains believe they can conquer has proven only marginally effective. While Luskan, and therefore the Brotherhood by proxy, is definitely a force of some power within the mercantile and political life of the Sword Coast, it's still a minor power whose reach has often exceeded its grasp. So attempts within the last 5 years to conquer naval powers of larger cities are unsuccessful and costly, while Luskan's short-lived war against Lantan was nothing short of disastrous. However, the Luskan army did manage to defeat the Northlanders of Rothheim on their second attempt and seize control of the island in 1361 DR, but the Lord's Alliance from Waterdeep forced Luskan to give up its conquest. So it's always like one step forward, two steps back. It seems right, like their eyes are bigger than their stomachs, so to speak.
Yeah, they don't seem, I don't want them to send anybody after me, but they don't seem that dangerous, to be honest.
I mean, they seem dangerous. They just don't seem that organized or that strategic.
Well, you know, some men just want to watch the world burn. That's from a different movie.
That's true. That is right. So It was immediately on the heels of this Lantern debacle that the Brotherhood began its decline. Internal rivalry, as we have said, you know, earlier, has always plagued this society, but it was never as fierce or as bloody as it was in the ensuing years. Two of the ranking mages assassinated the Archmage's top assistant and then plotted to overthrow Greith himself. Greith, the Archmage, didn't help matters either, allowing himself to be preoccupied by something he considered far more pressing than his society's goals, which was his own mortality. Distracted by his search for a means to prolong his life, Arklim Greith didn't see the coup attempt that happened until it was too late. Didn't see it coming until it was too late. As it was, he barely escaped with his life and was forced to flee Luskan when he remained away from the city, away from his society, for the better part of a year. It was in his exile that he made a new friend. Now, this new friend, it was an Arenas by the name of Niphithis. Now, Niphithis offered to grant the frail, wounded archwizard what he had so desperately sought, eternal life, to cheat death. In return, Arklim needed to only allow Niphithis and her associates to help the Brotherhood win the North.
This is a great deal.
When you're dealing with fiends and devils, there's never no such thing as a good deal for the other party.
I don't see how this could possibly go wrong.
Greith would agree with you because he quickly accepted the bargain. And while his would-be successors squabbled among themselves for the spoils of their victory, Arklim underwent the transformation from human to lich.
I've been thinking about making that transition.
I think you should. I think you would. I think you would really blossom and prosper as a lich.
I think so too. I'm trying to decide what I'd use for my phylactery. I'll decide by the end of the show.
By the end of the show, we'll reveal what would we use as a phylactery were we to delve into lichdom. So, the process being done, he and Greith and his newfound compatriots return to Luskan. But what they find there isn't surprising. The half towers, half vacant, many of its mages and servants having fled the internal civil war or someplace, some locale less dangerous. The organizational structure close to complete ruin. And the high captains were acting with total disregard for the Brotherhood's interests. Essentially, think of when you're in school and a substitute teacher shows up, you're not getting any work done. You're not doing anything you're supposed to be doing while that sub is there. And the teacher shows up the next day, starts yelling at you, and you try to act like you don't have no idea what she's talking about.
Right. Like you weren't acting like a total terror the day before.
So acting quickly, the Archmage and Niphithis enter the host tower and destroy the traitors. The streets of Luskan are bathed in this hellish glow that flashes intermittently from the tower, accompanied by the terrifying sounds of mortal beings enduring unimaginably painful fates. The high captains found themselves summoned to the host tower the following morning. And it's said that the story of the captain's frantic departure from the tower about an hour later, heightened by the description of their ashen faces and terrified demeanor, this story has proven popular in the retelling throughout the taverns of Luskan and beyond. What's more alarming, though, are the assertions that these strange, awful creatures have been seen around the stone spires of the host tower since Greith's return. Since this time, Arklim and Nephthys have labored ceaselessly to rebuild the Brotherhood, promoting loyal mages to stations of authority, seeking out replacements for the executed traitors, and laying out a plan for the society's conquest of the North. All this occupies most of their time. It seems like, if your goals align with that of the Arcane Brotherhood, it seems that, you know, Nephthys might have been that missing puzzle piece.
Yeah, sounds like it. I'm telling you, this was a good deal.
This was a get. This was, in terms of sabermetrics, in terms of Moneyball, Nephthys gets on base. However, around the end of 1376 DR, Luskin is invaded by a group of lords from Waterdeep. This is all portrayed within the legend of Dritz's novel, The Pirate King. So Dritz is in and around at the time. The Brotherhood's presence in Luskin is essentially destroyed. Many wizards are killed. And Greith himself flees the city after causing tremendous damage to invading forces and leaving the tower itself in ruins by detonating his staff in a cataclysmic release of energy.
That's pretty cool.
It's very cool. In the century that followed, the host tower of the Arcane, once home to the Arcane Brotherhood, stood in ruins, haunted by undead. Lesser creatures roam the area around the structure. Greater threats are entombed below. Few dungeons are more dangerous than this one, and the locals won't go anywhere near it. That was essentially the fate around the 4th edition era of D&D. But once the 5th edition era rolls around, it all changes with the sudden return of the Arcane Brotherhood. So a few years prior, the ruined host tower of the Arcane began regenerating its damaged stone, climbing into the sky once more. I mean, you might argue, like, okay, this ungodly, the seemingly impossible structure is scary enough as it is. But then it starts rebuilding itself. So, like, okay, like, now I know there's something, something is wrong with this thing.
You imagine if you live in Luskin and, like, you start to notice it rebuilding itself, like, you know, you're just, like, you know, going to work and the giant tower is rebuilding itself. Like, that's like, not a good start to your day.
Or, yeah, like,
if you're like me and you got the blue house because you wanted to be close to it, it's just like, heck yes.
Like, you pass by it on your way to work every day and you're like, is that thing taller? It seems taller than it was yesterday. I must be losing it. And then before you know it, it's rebuilt. And you're like, I can't even tell you when or how it happened. It's probably the most logical way to get it done without anyone really saying anything about it.
Yeah.
So shortly thereafter, mages of the Arcane Brotherhood emerge, almost immediately begin cleansing the Luskar ruins of undead, and actually fight off a dragon menacing the city.
Oh, they're heroes now.
Right. So they're cheered by the citizens, and they swore to keep themselves out of the politics of the high captains in the city at large. But the idea, the notion that these powerful wizards who are closely aligned with one another can truly remain neutral is pretty laughable to anyone who's familiar with such things. Nowadays, the Arcane Brotherhood again walks the streets of Luskin, marked by distinctive colors and patterns on their cloaks. From a distance, these cloaks all bear the same cut and silhouette, but each wizard of the host tower chooses a color or a design and a moniker to match it. So leading into the 16th century DR, the Arcane Brotherhood lacked any central leadership since its former Archmage Arcane, the Lich Arklam Greith, was forced into his phylactery over 100 years ago. And for a brief period, five wizards vied for leadership until Cashin the Red was able to secure the position. So as we stand now within the timeline of the Forgotten Realms, Cashin the Red is the Archmage Wizard. Is the Archmage Arcane. And he is currently flanked by the other four acting as his over-wizards. You have Zelen the White, Jendrik the Blue, Teyva the Gray, and Juret the Raven. We're going to take a quick break, go to the middle of the show, and when we come back, we're going to dive further into Arklam Greith's story. Figure out, hey, what's going on with that guy? What's his deal?
Is he single?
No, actually. Hello and welcome to the middle of the show, of course, where we do all the midly show stuff that needs to be done, like thanking the patrons and talking about D&D news, or even talking about homebrew shenanigans. First and foremost, this week, we want to send our deepest condolences to the family and friends of Janelle Jacquez, who passed away this past week. Janelle was a heavy hitter in early D&D. If you are familiar with TSR era D&D artwork, more than likely you have seen some of her work. In fact, the Practical Planetology cover for Spelljammer, when I close my eyes and I think of Spelljammer as an image, that image often comes up. It's that iconic. And not only was she an amazing artist, she also wrote modules for D&D, also for Steven Jackson Games, worked with id Software on a couple of the Quake games, just an all-around immense talent. And we want to just, again, send our deepest condolences to her wife, Rebecca Heinemann, and her kids and friends, family, anyone who's been affected by this loss. And I love what Rebecca wrote following Janelle's passing on X. She wrote, to paraphrase Dr. Seuss, don't cry because Janelle is gone. Smile because she touched your life. I wish that one day she may touch my life again. So thank you so much, Janelle, for everything that you have given the TTRPG community, and your absence will be greatly felt and you will be missed. Moving on to the more traditional middle of the show stuff, I want to thank the listeners. Thank you so much for listening, for supporting the show, for supporting the show just by listening or by following us on all the different social medias. Pretty much anywhere you can think of, we are at D&D Lorecast. Whether it be X or Threads or Blue Sky, Instagram, TikTok, Twitch, we've got the branding part down at the very least. So if you want to support the show in other ways, you can join the Discord, carry on the conversation there. Links to all of this are in the show notes as well, obviously. If you want to support the show in a super cool way, you can go over to patreon.com/dndlorecast, where we have all sorts of different tiers, where you can get bonus content, you can get early ad-free episodes, you can get access to all of the legacy episodes with Stuart and Tom, you can get free merch, you can get invitations to the Patreon Roundtable or to the upcoming actual plays that debut this month, Tales from the Tower. Again, only if you're interested, only if you feel compelled to. By all means, just listening to the show is support enough. It's more support than I could ever could have hoped for. But if you are interested, patreon.com/dndlorecast. And as far as D&D news is concerned, they just announced a couple of cool things coming out in August. The first of which is the Book of Concealment, which is a game screen, a DM screen, and a journal in one. For any D&D player, this officially licensed and beautifully illustrated D&D journal features gridded pages and a hardcover case that doubles as a game screen. It's illustrated by artist Hydro74, who used to do all the friendly local game store alternate versions, alternate covers of the D&D books, and I love that style of art. I love the that really clean, almost cartoony but still very realistic art style. But yeah, that's coming out. It's got that markets or that MSRP is $24 for that. Also coming out on the same day, August 13th of this year, is the Mimic Treasure Chest Notebook Set. This is a set of 5 4x6 blank notebooks that you can put inside of a clamshell box designed to look like a mimic. Again, very freaking cool. This one will go for about $27.99. I mean, I'm buying them absolutely. I'm a homer for D&D stuff, especially when the artwork is this cool, and you know, journals and notes, notepads. Like, yeah, absolutely, 100%. I'm down. As far as homebrew shenanigans, what do we have in the homebrew corner of the week? So, this week, since we are talking about the Arcane Brotherhood, talking about Luskin, I found from Arcane Impact the Luskin Visitor's Guide. You need to know about Luskin? Well, I've got this old pamphlet here. Good luck. You'll need it. This has information on points of interest, travel options, businesses for both the North and the South Banks, custom labeled maps so that your players know where they are and where they're going, classic landmarks such as the Throat, the Mirabar Shield, and of course the Host Tower of the Arcane. And it's entirely customizable. If you want to include descriptions for your campaign, you can easily edit any field in an Acrobat reader or whatever PDF reader that you have. It has a suggested price of $2. It's pay what you want. But yeah, throw a couple of gold pieces the Arcane Impact's way. Why not? I feel they deserve it. It's a very awesome and cool thing that you could like hand out almost as a that you can give as a handout to your players if you're playing in an adventure or campaign where Luskin is a setting. So there's a link to that in the show notes to DM's Guild. That being said, let's get back to the show. Welcome back. We're talking the Arcane Brotherhood, collection of evil mages that pretty much ruin living in a small port town in the northern Sword Coast. I mean, like, kind of like if the mafia was just like in and around Cleveland. Like, you know, they're not in Waterdeep. Like, they're not powerful enough to do anything in Waterdeep or Baldur's Gate. They have their, you know, sights set on a middle to, you know, upper middle tier city. Which, hey, I mean, like, you got to start somewhere, I guess, right?
You do have to start somewhere. And I think that's the message we can all take away from the Arcane Brotherhood.
From this group of, you know, just swell fellas and gals. Of course, almost entirely made up of mages. Non-mages are hired and employed to perform tasks that the mages either can't or don't wish to undertake for themselves. The wizards also employ other minor functionaries such as messengers, informants, spies, others who are not full-fledged members of the organization and thus not privy to more information than is absolutely necessary for them to know to accomplish their assigned tasks. So there's definitely a hierarchy that exists within the Arcane Brotherhood. So obviously you have the non-mages who do the bidding of the mages. Then you would have like your normal mages that, you know, are full members but don't have any specific title. And then you have the Oberwizards. Now the Oberwizards will be the topic of this episode's Patron Plus installment. So if you want to know more about that, definitely check out patreon.com/dndlorecast. And above the Oberwizards, you have the Archmage Arcane. The Archmage Arcane appoints the four Oberwizards who then oversee the group's operations. They essentially are the day-to-day of the Brotherhood. So little information exists about the current Archmage Arcane, Kashan the Red. So we'll discuss more so Arklum, for the rest of this episode. He is the founder of the Arcane Brotherhood, and there's a ton of juicy lore when it comes to this rascal of a guy. So the Archmage Arcane is more than merely the first among equals. He is the supreme ruler of the Arcane Brotherhood. In a very real sense, the organization belongs to him. It is his to do what he pleases, and none have the authority to challenge him or his word. The Archmage Arcane seldom leaves his private chambers within the host tower, and when he wishes to speak with any other members of the organization, he typically summons them to his audience hall. Otherwise, they'll remain in solitude, except for in the case of Arklam Greith, frequent visits from his fiendish friend, Nifithus, and this is for the purpose of planning the means by which they intend to bring the land under their control. So, Arklam Greith.
Great name.
It's a great name, and I love how he's described. He was, until quite recently, a hateful, embittered old man. And I feel like that could also be used to just begin your plot synopsis of the movie Up.
Yeah.
In fact, Arklam Greith is a very old man, having prolonged his existence far beyond its natural limits through the aid of wish spells and other powerful magic.
Gas station pills and the like.
Exactly. Powerful magic. Like I said, powerful magic. You don't have to be.
You don't have to get super specific. So we got a lot of material to cover here.
His frail form is bent nearly double. He's nearly doubled over with age. His every waking minute racked with infirmity and ill health. The sheer weight of years began to erode the efficacy of the magic sustaining his withered shell. I mean, this is someone using magic to stay alive much longer than even magic could probably endure.
Right.
The vast majority...
Even magic has its limits, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Magic has its limits. The vast majority of his unnaturally long lifespan has been spent seeking the secrets of Faerun's most powerful magic, traveling the length and the breadth of the world to plumb the depths of arcane knowledge in far-flung lands such as Mulhoran, Thay, or even Karatur. It was only in recent decades that he experienced the desire to control a major portion of Faerun and to establish himself as a power in his own right, believing that an individual possessing such vast knowledge and power must obviously necessarily be destined to rule. It's like, I'm smart, I'm powerful, I should be, like, obviously, I should be on top.
Flawless logic.
But death stalked him relentlessly as his life-sustaining magic began to fail, and Arklam realized many more years would be required to accomplish his goals. So what's an evil mage to do?
If you only decide you want to conquer a land when you're like towards 400. The end of your life. Yeah.
Well, his thoughts turned inward. Like, hey, maybe I'm the problem. And he began to contemplate the options available to him. He became so distracted that he neglected the health of the organization he had built. And this is when that aforementioned attempted coup took place. Two of his more talented minions, Eldaluk and Vaclabar, assassinated the Wizard of Green Fire, who had been the Archmage's top lieutenant. That was their second in command that I had mentioned earlier.
Mm.
The two killers then set their sights on the Archmage himself, catching him unaware in his bedchamber in 1371 DR. However, thanks to the magical protections that he always kept in place, again, like we had mentioned, this is a place where you have to worry about your coworker essentially stabbing you in the back. So,
and the building itself is evil. So I imagine you've got to be on guard against it too.
So yeah, so he has these magical protections, wards in place. I guess you would always have to, right? If you wanted to make sure to ensure that you stayed alive. So thanks to these, he was able to flee the host tower with his life, but he was severely injured. Making use of a pre-planned escape route, he traveled to Mirabar. Again, pre-planned escape route. Like, he had this plan just in case. Such a stressful way to live.
What a brotherhood.
What a brotherhood. There, he went to essentially a safe house that he had prepared years ago against just such an emergency, and contemplated his fate while he recovered slowly from his wounds. It was in this state that Nephthys first visited him. The devil played to her strengths, taking advantage of the wizard's frail body, broken spirit, to overwhelm him with her charms. And by the time she offered to share the secret of lichdom, Arklum was only too ready to become a willing partner. The devil helped her victim gather the necessary knowledge and ingredients for his transformation into a lich, and then accompanied him back to the host tower so that she and a few summoned by Tezu could aid in the defeat of his enemies. With the help of these devils, the Archmage Arcane destroyed both traitors, Eldaluk and Valkabar, and the rebel wizard's loyal agents also perished that night as Arklum purged the Brotherhood of all he did not consider loyal to him. When the blood finally ceased to flow, Arklum was satisfied that those he had allowed to survive his fury would be obedient to his commands. Not a wild thing to assume, right? That if I have 100 people and I kill 70 of them and keep 30 alive, that those 30 are probably going to kowtow to what I want, right?
I mean, yeah, I think that's not an...
Also, I have a handful of devils fighting at my back.
Right. Yeah, I think the devils are pretty good insurance. Because I was about to say, though, like, I mean, this isn't much of a brotherhood, right? I mean, he literally planned his life around who's going to try and kill me and when. But now he's like, you know what? You 30, you're the cool ones.
Y'all are cool. Y'all are great.
And I'm going to let you live because you're going to do what I say, right?
Yeah, I guess brotherhood is... bit of a misnomer.
That's what it's all about.
It's a bit of a misnomer, but you know, maybe Arklum didn't have a thesaurus at the time. He's like, what are you gonna call this collection of arcane magic users? Like, well, arcane sounds cool. Arcane
league
like that. I don't like that. Brotherhood. Yeah, brotherhood. Yeah, brotherhood.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
Then he kills, you know, somebody. Like, that way the people won't know, like, didn't have a name to begin with. So, three of the...
Right, he killed everybody who was listening to him while he was figuring it out.
He killed everyone listening to him workshop the name. He gotta present a firm and strong appearance.
Right, you can't have people telling that story all over town.
Right. It's like, yeah, like, he didn't even know what to call it, to be honest. That's embarrassing. So three of the previous Overwizards had escaped. Jaluth Snakeface Alerth, who is a hot-tempered woman whose face is cursed to spit forth snakes when she is angry. I mean, again, good
name.
I mean, yeah. What do you call her? That's snake face. Although, again, that's pretty good insurance. I mean, like, the Hulk's like, oh, you don't make me mad. You wouldn't like me when I'm mad. Like, right. Literally, Jaluth's like, no, seriously, I get mad. Why do you think they call me snake face? She fled to the wildlands around Icewind Dale with three golems. Ornar of the Claw, a soft-spoken mage named for some of his unique spells, fled eastward into a stronghold in the Evermoors. And Deltagar Zelhund, consorts with Yanti, has gone into hiding in Londeth. So, but there's always four Overwizards, right? There's the Archmage Arcane, and then there's the four over wizards. So those three escaped. So what happened to the fourth? The fourth, Eltuth Wyvern Master Oyim, was turned to stone, shattered, and restored to flesh, and then fed to some of his own charmed pets. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, bummer for him.
No,
like,
for
every,
sure.
Every time he's like, well, at least it can't get any worse. And then he's back and he's like, oh my God, I've been forgiven. This is going to be great. Oh, and I'm reunited with my own, with my beloved pets.
Well, yeah, that's,
and, yeah. And then, yeah.
And then couldn't have happened to a nicer guy. I mean, he was the over wizard of the Arcane Brotherhood, a collection of evil mages. So
mm-hmm.
I'm sure you don't get to that position by being a swell guy.
Yeah, no.
So the Archmage Arcane then directed a period of rebuilding, during which he promoted members in the now vacant over wizard positions and contemplated the state of the North. Honoring his agreement with Nephethys, he ordered that the Silver Marches are now the revitalized Brotherhood's primary target. Since then, the Lich and his devilish companion have bent their collective minds and will toward devising the best means of bringing the fledgling Confederation under their control. Arklim doesn't even truly care why the Silver Marches are of such an interest to the Arenas. Just, oh, that's what you want? Sure, okay. I guess we have a deal, so that's what I'm going to do. Doesn't
I mean, when you're in love, you know, you just kind of... I assume they're together?
No, no. They're together as devil and willing participant can be, which is to say that the power dynamic is all out of whack in that relationship.
I mean, I'm not saying it's a healthy relationship. I'm not saying it's one that we should all aspire to, but
you look,
right,
baby, you want to conquer the Silver Marches? I want to conquer the Silver Marches.
That's right.
So the young realm is well within the area he desires to control, and he surmises that its youth may make it more vulnerable than some of the established kingdoms and cities in the vicinity. Freed from the specter of a slow, painful death by old age, Arklim enjoys a new sense of purpose that enables him to concentrate completely on claiming the realm that he covets so dearly. Indeed, to his fellow members in the Brotherhood, it appears that the process of becoming a Lich may have also affected their leader's mind in some fashion, for he now seems, in their eyes at least, to be even more single-minded than before, perhaps even to a detriment, perhaps dangerously so. His determination to rule over the peoples of the North, even if it takes him several more lifetimes, seems to be the only thought that burns into his now undead brain. In fact, Arklim's transformation into a Lich came too late to repair the damage already inflicted on his body by the ravages of time.
Oh, that's heartbreaking.
Right? Like, it's, you know, it's not Penny's boat sort of thing. His frame, for example, still bent, giving him the appearance, at least, of frailty. But this appearance obviously belies the unnatural strength of his now undead body. And having come into lichdom only recently, Arklim's skin has only just started to wither in earnest. His eyes, however, have already decayed and sunk into his head, leaving empty sockets that burn with pinpoints of ghastly crimson light. And like I said, this was all the stuff with Arklim. That's third edition era, toward the end of the third edition, toward, you know, roughly around the time of the Sundering. The Arcane Brotherhood, the Host Tower, is more or less destroyed. Arklim goes into hiding, goes into his phylactery to hide. And the Arcane Brotherhood in the Host Tower sits vacant for the majority of the fourth edition era. And it isn't until the fifth edition era, which is almost 16th century, late 15th century DR, that the Arcane Brotherhood sees a resurgence under the leadership of Kashan the Red. Now,
Kashan's like, this time we're going to be a brotherhood for real, guys.
For real. I love you guys. he's been watching a lot of like the Hangover movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's like, you guys are my wolf pack.
You guys are my wolf pack. And so how Arklum, fits into the plans moving forward into the Arcane Brotherhood. It's interesting to know. You know, there's a lot of stuff, a lot of meta plot stuff going on. Moving into the 50th anniversary of D&D, moving into the 2024 rule books that will be released. You know, we have the 20 level adventure campaign that centers around Vecna. I think a lot of old faces will start to appear, especially faces from outside Forgotten Realms. You know, faces from Greyhawk, faces from other worlds and campaign settings that I've either only been touched upon in 5th edition or haven't been seen at all. So very, very exciting times we're living in. And I don't just mean that because the host tower is rebuilding itself. So we are at the end of the show. We promised you, dear listener, what we will tell you what our phylactery would be were we to choose lichdom over a normal life. So Sean, what would you pick? If you were to become a lich, what object would you use to keep a portion of your soul so that you may always remain alive, even if your physical vessel was destroyed?
I think I would choose my fidget cube. I've had it for many years, and I never have it far from me. So it seems like a natural, it'd be either that or my car keys. But the problem is I get a new car every several years. So like, you know, what's the point of carrying around a car key to a Toyota I haven't owned since 2009 or whatever, you know? So I think fidget cube seems pretty safe because I've had it for a long time. And it's small and innocuous, so it wouldn't, you know, if you've got it on a, you know, it's like a Last Crusade situation. If you've got a bunch of objects on a table and somebody's like, you can choose one and maybe destroy Sean, nobody's going to go for the fidget cube unless they listen to this episode, in which case I'm going to have to change my answer.
So if you're listening, don't try to destroy Sean. If he became a lich, he's a good guy. I'm sure if he became a lich, he had a great reason. And it wasn't to, you know, rule the North.
No, it's just so I'd have more time to read.
Yeah, this is finally enough time. I would use my wedding band, but there would be a heartbreaking story behind that. Like I chose lichdom in order to save my spouse for some reason, but that choice is what spurned her against me, and so she's forever lost to me. And so I keep this wedding band as my phylactery, as this sort of heartbreaking reminder of, you know, what I gave up to become what I am.
That's really sad.
It is sad. And that's kind of my brand when it comes to world building. very Shakespearean and tragic.
Fidget cube of doom for me.
Yeah, yours is just the little thing that you can't stop touching. It's like I need to be doing something with my hands.
Yeah, it really, yeah. ADHD. Woo.
What a thing. What a time to be alive. Well, thank you so much for listening, dear listener. We appreciate your love and support, and you're more than welcome to join us again next week. Next week is going to be a fun episode. We're going to talk some Eberron. It's going to be a lot of fun. Eberron is a campaign setting I haven't really delved into since 3rd edition. Obviously, it's carried over into 4th and now 5th edition as well. But I haven't really dug into it as much as I did when it initially came out. When it first came out, it was, man, that was my jam. Talking like a pulpy, steampunky type D&D. Yeah, I like that. I like that a lot. So if you are also into that, join us next week. And until then, my name's Sergio.
My name is Sean.
Fare thee well, dear listener, and until we meet again, may all your 20s be natural.
Thank you for listening to the Dungeons & Dragons Lorecast. If you've enjoyed the show, consider following us on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at D&D Lorecast, or jumping into the Robots Radio Discord to chat more with us about Dungeons & Dragons. We'll see you soon.
You've been listening to a Robots Radio podcast. Smart shows for interesting people. Check out all the shows at robotsradio.net.